Welcome to the Pro-Life Team Podcast. Today, I'm with Sandy, and Sandy's going to interview me about the history of iOption.com. So, welcome, Sandy.
Hi. I am super excited to be here and talking about the history of iRapture. I've been with iRapture for almost 2 years now. And so me finding out a little bit more about the background is going to be pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm excited to go down memory lane. So how would you like to get started, or what question do you want to ask first?
Yeah, so you know what? I'd love to know more about where the name of iRapture came from, and how did that come about?
So Nick Olson, who was my business partner on day one, had the great idea of keeping God first, and so at a New Year's Eve party on the cusp of Y2K, so on the last day of 1999, we stayed up to midnight, and we're brainstorming before and after midnight about what names might be a good fit for this website design company we were starting, and we were trying to go with the concept of keeping God first. And so we came up with a list of over 90 names, and iRapture.com ended up being the one that resonated or made it to the top, and it was picked. And we liked the name because if you're a Christian, you can say iRapture. And that was really the main piece that connected us to the name, along with the desire to keep God first in picking a name.
Wow, that's interesting. So how did it, so like it was just total brainstorming. Like there was nothing like, yeah. It came out of like,
just brainstorming, talking after midnight at a New Year's Eve party, when the world could have ended with, going from two, with the concerns over two characters, and having things get reset. We weren't really too worried about it, but we did enjoy brainstorming, at that exact time about this. And then what's really nice about a name that starts at the beginning of on January 1st of 2000 is that it's really easy to know how old we are. And so that part's really true. Nice.
Yeah, easy to remember with all those things going on. Yeah. I remember Y2K. Oh my goodness, that is a blast out of the history.
Yeah.
Everybody wondered if the world was going to just stop. Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah. So let's back up a little bit. Tell me something that most people don't know about you. Something fun and unexpected.
Something about me. Okay. So a lot of people don't know that I got into the pro-life movement doing Hans and Franz skits. So we were... there was an acting group that came to my high school when I was a senior, and they were doing these really fun skits, peer to peer or students to students. And I ended up really enjoying just their energy and their excitement. And they were essentially talking about waiting until marriage to have sex, but doing it through like very creative skits that they wrote themselves. And so I ended up joining that group and doing Hans and Franz and a lot of other skits at hundreds of venues across Tucson. And mostly schools, some churches. We even went to Juvie. But doing Hans and Franz, and we had lots of different versions, and we had our own muscle suits. And I would say most people don't know that.
That's awesome. Yeah. So is this something you, with iRapture, is this something you always saw yourself doing, like becoming a business owner and doing the media, or is this something just kind of like, did it give birth at your New Year's Eve party, or how did that all come about?
So when I was a junior in high school, after a very inspirational church service, I decided to pray for a year about what God wanted me to do with my life. So I prayed every day, you know, God, what do you want me to do with my life? Like literally as simple as that for about 6 months. I didn't pray every day, but I tried. And after 6 months, I knew that God wanted me to work with my own business, work with kids, and work with my church. And initially, I had no idea what that looked like. Like, I thought maybe I'd be working at a, you know, doing a toy store to raise money for an orphanage group. I wasn't quite sure. But, you know, over time, it's become really clear that working in the pro-life movement allows me to have a business, work with lots of churches, and help lots of kids. And so, and I feel like God's blessed me when I'm hitting on all three of those marks based on that direction from high school that I got by praying every day until I had confidence or knew where God was leading me.
Awesome. So during that journey, when did it come out that you wanted to move into like marketing and media and content and so forth?
Yeah, I would say, God seems to open one small door at a time, and I sometimes trip through it or walk through it. But yeah, at first, so, you know, a little more back history of irapture.com is it's a DBA, a doing business as name for Melodious Messages, LLC. And Melodious Messages is often confused with Melodious Massages, but it's actually Messages. And it's actually turned out to be a really nice name. I really like it today, probably more than I did when I first picked it. So do you have any idea where Melodious Messages came from or where that root is?
No, that's my next question was going to be.
So I went to the Eller College of Entrepreneurship at U of A, and I wanted to start a business right out of college, but I didn't want to have one that was going to be really busy. I wanted one just so I could understand the process of having a business. And so I started a singing telegram business. And so that, so Melodious Messages is a singing telegram business. And I think we only did like 5 or 6 singing telegrams in the entire history of the singing telegram wave that we had. But I did get to do taxes. I did get to set up, you know, the certain parts of the business without having to worry about being overwhelmed with business, because that part definitely did not happen. We did have an employee. I bought him a guitar for doing some singing telegrams. But what's interesting is that a singing telegram business is a service business. And so then after doing that, I ended up doing drywall in Nogales, also under Melodious Messages, because that's also a service. I was doing that with my uncles, doing drywall work, working on construction. And again, all under Melodious Messages, getting the experience of running things through the business, doing the bookkeeping. And then it wasn't until that, you know, Nick Olson and I were brainstorming about building websites and building websites for just anybody. Not, we didn't have the pro-life vision like today at all, but we did catch it. We did catch it together, actually. And I would say John Tabor with the Crisis Pregnancy Clinics of Tucson was instrumental in a few ways. One was maybe back up a moment. So while starting irapture.com, we had very little income because it was a brand new business. And so I was working at the Crisis Pregnancy Clinics of Tucson as a publishing manager, effectively having a full-time job and then doing irapture.com after hours. And I was essentially helping cover Nick's rent and bills while he was helping grow the business in that very beginning time. And then when it got to the point where I could also, you know, cut back on hours and pull a salary from irapture.com, I think that happened in about right around like 1.5 years into the business. And so, but essentially I was working as a publishing manager at the Crisis Pregnancy Clinics of Tucson. And I heard about them because of my acting volunteer work with that same group, because that's the group that was housing the USA team, Unified Students for Abstinence. And let me think, where were we going with all this? What was your original question now?
I'm not sure. Okay.
Yeah. So, marketing. Right. So marketing. Oh, right, so right. I ended up doing some marketing, well, printing, using Erisograph, using printers, doing very little design, mostly just printing, doing a lot of brochure printing work for the CPCs of Tucson. And I built their first website, and it was the first website that I had ever built. And I made a lot of mistakes. We had the Plan of Salvation and the King James Version on the client-facing site. We had one site for all audiences. We had Christian note cards on there. I honestly really just, I did not understand the audience. I did not understand the messaging that goes into, you know, per audience. But all to say is I learned a lot. And then going down that learning curve, John Tabor ended up paying half so that Nick and I, not actually was at that point, it wasn't Nick and I anymore. It was Jeremy Lefevre and I believe Matt Manis, he paid for half so that we could go to a Heartbeat International conference. And when we went to the Heartbeat International conference, our eyes were open to the need, because we had gone through this learning curve with the CPCs of Tucson, going from like making all the mistakes to making a lot less mistakes, and understanding that there were two audiences, and starting to begin our education of messaging. And we still had a ways to go, but we were definitely further than the average clinic. And so when we went to Heartbeat's first conference, we were able to see all these websites that were essentially way back to where we were in the beginning, but they hadn't progressed like we had by doing so much research and rebuilding and work. And so we saw the opportunity to try and bring other clinics to the same point that we had arrived at that time with the CPCs of Tucson. And so marketing, I would say, God just sort of opened one door after another. I had a natural leaning towards it, but it was not what I was pursuing during these initial months. It was more of God showing the need and us just sort of gravitating towards it more so than intentionally going in that direction.
So what year was that? The Y2K 2000.
Yeah, in 2000 is when we started. And then Nick ended up, Nick and I also were working. So back in that year, we took a full-time job at Eller Media, which is a billboard company. And Irish.com was still like in its infancy. But then when the 9/11 took place, there was a large amount of, people stopped spending on advertising, and there was a large layoff at Eller Media, now Clear Channel Outdoor. So I ended up getting laid off during that very large layoff. I don't feel terrible today, because Carl Eller, the person who started Eller Media, also was laid off, but he sold the company for $1 billion to Clear Channel Outdoor. And his last day, actually my last day, got to be shared by his last day. And I was really sad, but at the same time, that made me feel a little bit better that it was because of things outside of, you know, my control or what I did perhaps. And it was essentially, there's a lot less advertising going on when 9/11 took place, and there was a lot of uncertainty. And so Nick ended up transferring his ownership, his 50% ownership of iRapture.com to me, and I took on the $3,000 of debt that we had. And so, because we weren't profitable at that time, we were slightly upside down, but it wasn't that bad. I mean, $3,000 is what it was.
And you were just doing websites during that time, right?
What's that?
And you were just doing websites during that time?
So I was working for Clear Channel Outdoor with, right. But essentially Carl Eller hired both Nick and I. One of the things that was interesting about getting these jobs while we were also trying to build up this brand new company was, so we decided to go, the Eller Media website back then was behind compared to other websites that we had worked on at least. And so we made a meeting to go meet with Carl Eller. So we drove to Phoenix, and on the way to Phoenix, we decided to not try and sell him a website, but rather just listen, because he had like 47 years of experience when it came to business. And we decided just to use this as an opportunity to listen. And so we did that, and he ended up offering us both full-time jobs. That was the result of that meeting. And we did, and we actually ended up building websites for him, but we were fully employed on his team, and we were building internal tools or internal websites. And so that worked. And he also, part of our negotiation is we wanted to be able to do our own business while on site working for him full time. We wanted to be able to use, you know, see if we could use some of the equipment, like, you know, some of their resources to get our new business off the ground. And he was very supportive of helping, letting us use the office space, letting us work after hours there to get our company started. And the facilities there were amazing. They had just, you know, really nice space, really nice conference room. It was just an amazing place to be able to spend extra hours working on our own company.
So what were your biggest pivotal points throughout
Which points? The history?
The pivotal points, like points where you said, okay, this is what direction we're moving in. This is how we need to change. This is what we need to adapt to, those type of things.
Yeah. My first employee and also my lifelong best friend, Jeremy Lefevre, when he came on board, he was really good at, discovering strategic ideas. And so, working with Jeremy, a lot of things took place. One was identifying the need for a client-facing message and website, and then having a separate donor-facing website with message. And so really working with Jeremy, I'm not sure if it was me, I'm not sure if it was him, but I know working together, we came up with that concept, and now it's standard across the movement is to have one site per audience. And I'm not saying that someone else didn't figure it out on their own, because looking back, it seems very common sense. But we definitely worked on that together. And then I would also say John Tabor with the CPCs of Tucson was very instrumental, because he essentially helped me hire Jeremy. So he essentially paid Jeremy's full-time salary that Jeremy was making in order for him to join my team. And then we did lots of work for John. Essentially the way that played out was John wanted to see if I would come on and work full-time for him. And I told him, I've got this new business. I just don't have the bandwidth, but I came up with a solution, which was to hire Jeremy. And then between the two of us, we were able to satisfy and fulfill a full-time position. And so that's what happened. And essentially Jeremy was working for Sears, I believe, back then. No, or he was working at a call center or somewhere else. Maybe it was a thrifty car rental. He had a lot of different jobs. I forget which one he went away from, but essentially he came on board and then we started working on strategic planning, and he was really good at making plans to raise money for a clinic, making plans when it came to understanding how to measure the results of the work. And a lot of those concepts that Jeremy and I hashed out together And I would say he was instrumental in figuring out, have played out in helping us along, you know, much further down the road with iRapture.com. That was very instrumental. So between, yeah, John Tabor, Jeremy Lefevre, I also would say my wife has been very instrumental when it came to praying. Another interesting story is there's been many times when we didn't have enough money to make payroll. And so I would have anxiety, and I would go to I'd go to Heather and I'd say, would you pray? Because, you know, we need some money to come in. We need some work. We don't have enough work right now. And then she would pray, and then like a few days later, or maybe a week later, I would say, okay, stop praying because we've got more than we can do. And that was like a pattern that happened, I don't know, like 12 times a year. It was very reoccurring. And today, I don't even have that anxiety at all, because it took me a long time to not have the anxiety when the money wasn't there. Maybe after 40 or 50, you know, going through this repetition of, oh no, we don't have enough money. What can we do? Let's pray. Heather, will you please pray? And then it working out. Okay, please stop. We got more than we can do. So all that to say is I've learned that, yeah, I mean, God takes care of us. We've never had to take a loan. We've gotten really close, but we never did. And we've been able to donate a lot of services over the years. And I feel like we went from like being really tight to being really tight and donating. And God has blessed that, because, and sometimes people will say a workman's worth is higher, which, oh well, not people, but the Bible. Or people will say you shouldn't. And I would even tell people, don't donate your services and they're, you know, but at the same time, I feel like God has made it so that we have a mission as a company and a vision. And if part of reaching that mission and vision is making really good marketing accessible, then I feel like we have, and God has proven that we're able to donate and still make payroll. And even in the midst of some other financial hardships that sometimes would come up, but all that to say is we've been blessed, and we've been able to bless others.
That's awesome. So what would you think is like the biggest aha moment? Like, this has made the biggest impact in your history.
Yeah, I think we're on the cusp of the biggest aha moment. Honestly, abortion pill talk, I think, is going to be our biggest step into helping the whole pro-life movement seriously reduce chemical abortion. And it's another one of those really common sense ideas that I don't know why we haven't been doing this for a lot longer. But the idea of helping someone stop from taking the abortion pill is so much sweeter than helping someone after they've taken the abortion pill and reversing it. Well, that is amazing, but it's so much better to reduce the risk and help someone sooner. And I believe that's going to be the biggest project we have taken to date. And I'm very excited about it.
Yeah. And that's going to be launching soon, right?
Very soon. And we're trying to reduce roadblocks so that it doesn't get held up. And again, we're doing it without having, you know, maybe the financial fortitude that some people might expect to have a new project to have. We're doing it with minimal financial pieces, so that we can not be held back and making it take longer to start. But at the same time, we're learning there's a lot of pieces in play. We're learning a lot of new things while trying to get this prepped. And we do, yeah, there's some big needs there that we're trying to navigate right now. That's for sure.
So over the 20 years,
25 years,
25 years, 25 years, there's been a huge change in technology and what's available and stuff. So how does that like fit into your history and
So back in the early 2000s, I remember using Microsoft Publisher to build a website. And then I ended up starting to use Macromedia Dreamweaver. We built many, many websites with Dreamweaver. I remember building so many websites with Dreamweaver and Photoshop and getting it down to a science when it came to designing it in Photoshop, cutting, slicing it, putting it into Dreamweaver, and getting a site from like start to finish very easily within a day. I think the fastest site I ever built might've been like 6 hours. And now we have WordPress. And let me back up a moment. So before WordPress, we used to build with Expression Engine, Mambo, Joomla. We even built our own CMS called Architect, which we don't support anymore. But today we use WordPress, and we have a huge library of plugins that support WordPress and going further, faster, and being easy to edit while having advanced functionality. And the amount of time it takes to build a site has not really changed as much as other things, but the advanced features are nice. We used to even build websites in Macromedia Flash and then Adobe Flash before Apple stopped supporting Flash. And Flash was really fun because we could write with ActionScript, which is sort of like JavaScript, and we could have advanced functionality, we could have animation, and we could essentially having like data and animation all playing together. Flash was a pretty unique product when it came to having advanced functionality over how a website would look and work. And one of the guys we used to work with ended up getting hired by Google. And so we ended up working with him on several really big projects. Over the years, we worked on a wide range of projects, small businesses. We worked on a bank website. We've worked on nonprofits, churches, personal projects for different people, just a wide, wide range of projects. And today, we're making videos, we're writing content, we're working with Google, we're doing social media work, reputation management work. And essentially, you know, when it comes to a marketing project, once you have the skills with certain software, with certain concepts, with certain tactics, we can apply those to a wide range of scenarios. And we also have a gentleman by the name of Bill Ackerley, who has a lot of, he's been very influential as well in like helping me branch out into the greater marketing space, because he's got an advertising agency with him and his brother. And by working with him, we've done a lot of video shoots with teleprompters and with lighting, with makeup and with editing and so on, to essentially craft really good video content to support our vision and mission for pregnancy clinics.
So when do you see the biggest change happen? When did you see the biggest change happen in your structure from going from websites to kind of a wide range of full marketing for your clients? And what triggered that?
So I saw the change from going from like general websites to pregnancy clinics after we went to our first Heartbeat conference. And then I saw the change of going from just websites to a wide range of marketing, really based on what executive directors wanted and what ideas they had. There's some directors in this field that are innovative, maybe not even directors. Some of them are creative directors or the marketing directors more so than the executive director. Like for example, Donna Heckey with Real Options Obria would often ask us to do something that she identified as a good idea. And then when we did it for her, everyone else would want that as well. And so when we did things for certain people that were, you know, like John Tabor, he would often ask us for something that had not been done before. and he would take a risk by having us build it out. And then when it proved to be successful, everyone else would want it too. And so I would say we really were following the direction of executive directors and marketing directors, and then recycling or sharing the results with other pregnancy clinics in order. And then that's really sort of like the mantra of our pro-life team concept is do something national grade for one that's really epic and exciting that has some fruit, and then let others replicate it on the cheap. And we tell people that, you know, this is a mission-based concept. I mean, this is not a profit center, you know, that because the person that we're building that unique thing for is losing out on their first mover's advantage by letting others follow in their footsteps. And then we're also not maximizing the money on the table by letting other people follow in the footsteps on the cheap by leveraging copy paste rebrand instead of, you know, here's the large nut you got to cover to build this. We're effectively being more open by explaining how we can copy paste rebrand and recycle a good idea that's already been done.
And that's, you know, one of the things that I love about working here is that when you had talked about like getting involved with people who are innovative and you never say like, no, we can't do that. It's always like, how could we do this? You know, you're never afraid to take on a project. And sometimes that's scary, but it's amazing too, because it's like, okay. And when you brought up abortion pill talk, I mean, that was something that came up at the Heartbeat conference a year ago with Connie approaching, I think her and I talked and she said, hey, how would Jacob feel about this? And then pretty soon it was like, you just took that on and was excited about, you know, it always seems like when there's a new idea, you're right there to instigate that and be able to move forward with it. And how do you feel about that? I mean, like, is that like sometimes scary or do you just like, let's just open the door and see where it goes?
Yeah, I think it's answered prayer because I haven't been praying this prayer for many years now, but for a long time, I would pray, God, please let me know what we need to do so we're ready for what's coming down the road. And you know, the idea that whether that's for defense or some marketing offense, and by praying that, I felt like I was postured and aiming for what's new and needed so that when, you know, when the winds change or when the direction needs to change and we need to respond to what's coming down the road, I had a desire to know what's coming in 5 months or in a year. So I'm trying to be really close to trying to hear what's coming, trying to look for what's coming and praying about what's coming so that we're prepared and postured to respond and be ready for it. And so I feel like those prayers definitely made me position and posture and aim for like figuring out what new thing do we need to build, because things would, you know, the only thing that's constant is change. One of the books that John Tabor gave me was Who Moved My Cheese? And the nutshell of that book was, you know, things are going to change. If there's anything that you can count on is that, you know, your current place where you're getting this cheese in this book is going to dry out and you're going to have to go look for a new place. And that's guaranteed, is that things are going to change. And I would say in the technology world, it's getting the pace of change has increased with AI, when it comes to new tools, when it comes to, you know, going from building websites that work on a laptop or desktop to having to build them for a smartphone, and then to have smartphones pass desktops, and then to have tablets show up, and then to have smartwatches show up, and, you know, they didn't really take off for having to build websites for smartphones. And then wondering if there's going to be like large display vehicles coming down the road when people don't have to drive anymore. Like those are things that impact website building. And then when it comes to, technology, just the way people interact with technology, the way they look at it, the way people used to use the phone and now they prefer SMS. When it comes to Google, there's been a lot of changes that happen with Google when it comes to how Google, how you get traffic on Google, how you show up on Google, how you can advertise to be on Google with cash or grants, how you can get more backlinks. And some things do stay the same in the midst of all this change. And then some things will change. So yeah, it's a matter of paying attention and following it. And it helps to be in it for a long time because there's a lot of variables. And then one of the biggest changes I would say what happened when I was speaking with Donna Heckey with Real Options, now Real Options of Bria, back in 2011, she told me that on her intake forms, Google or internet passed word of mouth. And for a long time, word of mouth had been number one. And I honestly thought word of mouth would always be number one on the intake forms. And yeah, here we are 14 years later and Google/internet is, it makes everyone knows it's more common than word of mouth. And I think the reason, and then back in the day, people used to use Yellow Pages and that used to be on the intake forms and that one fell off and that one went, you know, fell off really quick. When it comes to word of mouth did not fall off. It simply fell into spot number two. And honestly, I want to say, I think it'll be spot number two for a long time, but also I think a chatbot could replace Google, but it has not yet, but it could. And we're going to have a lot less access to impacting a chat bot than we would impacting Google. Google's actually been, I know a lot of people like to hate on Google, a lot of people like to pull it, you know, throw mud at it because it's liberal, but it's actually been, it's been more fair than we probably expected or people know about. It's been more fair than more fair than a chatbot. I believe that, I think when it comes to the chatbot space, we're going to find a very different scenario and long for the days of Google. But yeah, essentially Google has replaced word of mouth and the, you know, essentially it's like the public, the public square where you ask for advice on, you know, look for the answer for a given question that used to be ask a person. And now it's ask Google because Google is faster, more accurate and more anonymous.
Yeah. So do you think chatbot or like ChatGPT or social media, what do you think is going to be the next biggest impact in change?
Yeah, I think it might be one of those. But then again, chatbots show up so quickly that I don't know what to call it. Grok, Siri, ChatGPT, there's just so many options. It's sort of like, you know, back in the day, there used to be newspaper, and then newspaper didn't see radio coming or didn't think radio was going to dominate. And then radio didn't see TV, TV didn't see internet. You know, maybe the cassette tape didn't see the 8-track or the CD didn't see the tape. I mean, MP3s or Spotify or, you know, I don't know. There's just so many things that replace something else. And the old thing doesn't go away, but it diminishes and fades and becomes less relevant. And the number of options has increased so much. Like just going from like broadcast TV to the internet, YouTube, with all these channels and options for playing streaming content, and then having advertisements and can, you know, and content has an impact, whether it's on a, and so like, you know, it used to be, yeah, all that to say is there's a lot and I don't really know, but at the same time, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there's a lot of options and it's really hard to point because what I do know is that the number of options has increased and people still use newspaper. People still use these older methods and they still have impact to a degree. But pregnancy clinics don't really use a lot of these older advertising venues very often, mostly because the cost is higher and there's more targeted, lower cost digital solutions that are really targeted that are essentially effectively replacing word of mouth so that it's a top level piece that needs to be done. Otherwise, we're missing out on what word of mouth used to be.
Yeah, it's just everything changes so fast right now, and it's hard to keep up. How do you keep up?
Yeah. I often feel like I'm not keeping up, but at the same time, I think I keep up on certain things okay, but I wouldn't say I'm the greatest at keeping up. A couple of years ago, I did a fast during Lent of social media. and then I found myself having less anxiety. And then I did it again the following year, and I've actually been able to stay off of it for the most part. Meanwhile, we're making social media content that's driven for clients and donors, but, and I have team members who are really good at certain things. And so I don't have to be good at everything, and I can stay off of social media and have less anxiety because of that. And mostly because we have team members who are really good at social media and does not require me to be good at everything. And so that's really nice.
Yeah. Yep. So what would you say in the past 25 years, what is one of the most interesting stories you have from your business?
We were working on a project for Obria in Washington, and we had just gotten hired. And then 2 weeks later, we got an investigory. And most people, I didn't know what an investigory is, so I'm assuming most people don't know what an investigory is. But apparently it's a form you have to answer under oath, and it's limited to 10 questions, but there's no limit to the sub-questions. And I was distraught. I had anxiety. I was scared. I didn't understand, you know, how to answer these questions, because they were asking for things that were impossible, like a document that would explain all of my verbal communications. Like, they wanted all of our communications, including verbal, and they wanted it documented in a way that was similar to like the Dewey Decimal System or something. It was bizarre. And I remember reaching out for help from NIFLA, ADF. I spoke probably to like Marsha Middleton with Alliance for Life Missouri, or Jarrell with Heartbeat. And I remember getting comforted through prayer and different people. And then it worked out where ADF provided these attorneys at no cost in Arizona and in Washington. And we were able to answer all but one question with NA, as in not applicable, because we didn't start working on that project that we had just gotten 2 weeks earlier. And normally I would have felt bad about not getting a new project and not starting on it for the first 14 days that we had it. But it worked out that that was miraculous, because we were able to answer not applicable, and we didn't even have to answer any of their questions because we didn't start working on the Washington project yet. And then once we sent off the response to the investigory, we started working on their project that afternoon. And so that was really good. And if they would have asked for our California work, we would have had 15 years of communications that they were asking for. And I'm not quite sure how we would have responded to that, but I would have gone with the advice of ADF, I believe, as being a really good source for how to navigate these hard questions. So I think, and that's really sort of helped us understand. That was sort of like a prep piece for Abortion Pill Talk, because that one has instrumentally helped us establish a desire to be legally defensible with our Abortion Pill Talk legal strategy. And so that one's played in there. I guess if I had to say overall, God has so many fingerprints and like different stories and scenarios and with how people have interacted with us. And it has a purpose, and it helps us. Yeah, all of it is sort of like a long journey of steps that have helped us form who we are and where we're going. And God's been very faithful for helping us learn things through a variety of creative ways. And I would say that's probably the biggest takeaway, is just simply like, whether it's good or bad, we have learned from both good and bad experiences that have then helped us prepare for things coming down the road.
So So what is one of your best memories?
Oh, wow. Let me think about. So one of my fondest memories of this work is going from someone that grew up at a Baptist church who was told very, very negative things about the Catholic Church. And really having Bill Ackerley, who's a Catholic in my life, was sort of like the precursor. But then meeting Sister Paula was instrumental in me going from, this old mindset of looking at the Catholic Church and everything that we're different about, everything that we would not agree on. I knew exactly everything that I could point out that was wrong, and I had no understanding of all the common ground. And Sister Paula just reflected such this beautiful persona of someone who was kind, generous, firm, and was really just accepting. And I don't know, something about my experience with Sister Paula really shifted my view of nuns, of Catholics. And I would just say that that's been really, really sweet. And today we work with 1/3 of the clinics we work with are evangelical, 1/3 Catholic, and then 1/3 a hybrid. And I would just say I think very highly of all three groups. But my preference would be the hybrid group model, because I believe those who agree that Jesus is God come in the flesh is, that's our main group. Like, that's who we are. And we do have one person on our team that does not agree with that. And we have a policy of one non-Christian at a time. And until Mo gets saved or he quits or gets fired, he's taking up that one spot. But all that to say is, that's our group, is we work with those who agree on who Jesus is. And that includes Catholic and evangelicals. And it's really good to have this bridge, this space where we work together. And we do have like 80% or maybe more common ground. And that's really good to focus on, and not to focus on the 20% of differences when it comes to denominational/church belief differences, but to really focus on the main pieces that we share.
Awesome. So to wrap everything up, what would you summarize for us?
That's a good question. Let me take a moment to think about that. So this podcast, I would say we've had these pillars of sharing God's fingerprints in the stories of people that are in this movement. Sometimes it's people who have really important things to share, and it's really good to echo and make those stories more accessible. Sometimes it's stories of people who are heroes in the back office, and it's really nice to give them some a way of saying thank you by sharing their story. And sometimes it's just simply, echoing and amplifying where God has worked, or God has answered prayer, or God has intervened, and trying to look for where he has shown up. And so that's really the first pillar out of three that we have for this podcast. The other ones are sharing new ideas that pregnancy clinic directors may not have tried yet, they may not know about, that we can give them exposure, not saying they're the best ideas, but saying that they're new at least. And then also, what is our third pillar? Sharing new ideas, amplifying God's fingerprints, and now I'm spacing. What's our third pillar? Give me a moment and I'll think of it. Oh boy, I forget that. Let's see. Oh wow, I'm gonna take this time and think of it, because I don't want to. I'll have some downtime air here, but I could pull up one of my emails and see God's fingerprints. What's new? Encouragement, and to encourage executive directors. So Yeah, really, I think those pillars don't just apply to the Pro-Life Team podcast. I think they sort of apply, you know, to how we operate as a company. Like, we have a value statement, these values of like accessibility, creativity. We have these different values that we hold. But I really like these three pillars as well, which is, yeah, God's fingerprints being amplified in stories, as well as the new ideas, and then having encouraging stories to encourage executive directors in what they're doing. Because often I see executive directors doing this really good work, not having all the answers, and putting themselves into a risky place, because that's what happens when you're in a spiritual fight and their enemy is looking for throwing, you know, explosive mud, let's call it. And so essentially by encouraging them and also trying to give them like a way of, you know, honor or saying thank you. So really, I feel like I would summarize those three pillars really reflect sort of my heart for where I've been, or where God's led me. Like, I don't know. I feel like God's done most of the door opening, and I sometimes, well, hopefully I'll walk through, but not always. I can't really take credit, because very often I feel like God just turns up the degree slightly and I just don't jump out quite yet. And so I don't feel like I deserve to know where things are going, because I feel like I'm trying to like walk down this path and I have very limited light. I can see like 5 to 10 feet in front of me, but I can't see what's around the bend. But God knows, you know, what's coming down the road, and he might help prepare us for that next part of the trek.
That's awesome. Thanks, Jacob. That's been a great story.
Thank you, Sandy, for interviewing and doing this. Would you wrap up the podcast with a prayer, and then we'll close it out?
Absolutely. Dear Jesus, thank you so much for all that you're doing in our lives, and that there's been so many victories in the pro-life movement, and we thank you for that, but there are so many challenges before us. And so I just pray that you would just do your work in our lives, help us to see you clearly, just give Jacob wisdom, and help him to just continue down that path, and give him guidance every step of the way. We thank you, God, for all that you're doing and for your grace upon us. And we pray that you would just continue that and just help us every step of the way. Thank you, Lord Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
Shepherd, I shall not be in want.
I shall not be in want.
He makes me lie down in green. He leads me by quiet blue. Yeah, the walk through darkest valleys, you are near me. Your protection and guidance are comforting me.
Flowing back.
dream.